present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph, read by Brian Perkins.
A helpful youth passing a police hockey game in Gillingham, Kent, threw the ball back to the players, who recognised the boy as a robbery suspect and arrested him.
Thank you, Mrs. Jean Crossfield of Kent, for sending us that. Well, now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Francis Ween. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Mark Stein. Before we start round one, here's a snippet from the Glasgow Herald, sent in by John Michael Welsh of Aberdeen.
Hemorrhoids, a cut-out-and-keep guide.
That sets the tone for the programme. Richard, it's nice to see you back from your holiday in Greece, looking extremely tanned and well.
Thank you very much.
Here's your question.
Get on with the question.
Who prefers not to refer to and
Are we into royalty?
No, no, you're into...
Well...
Ref...
Referendum. And,
Mr... You have to help them a bit, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's all to do with old Portillo, isn't it?
Well, not really, no.
Or is it Major? You explain at length, yes. Francis.
Richard's been on holiday in the Greek islands for the last week, and they didn't have this in his annual.
Well, all I saw was a very tattered copy of the Mail on Sunday. Well, you can imagine.
No, that doesn't cover this sort of story. It was about
didn't cover anything.
Just pages of horoscopes. But it was a story about there was a brief flurry of excitement after the local elections. Some twit on the Tory backbenches had the brainwave of having a referendum on Europe and said this will unite us all.
And, I thought that was Portillo.
Major said, no, it was all sorts of Eurosceptics. And there, for about 2 days, everyone got thrilled to bits by this and said, yes, our problems are over. And then Major said, no, they're not, I'm not going to have one. And that was the end of that.
That's it, more or less.
Very, very good. Very
absolutely, get your marks there. This is John Major, who refused to hold a referendum on Europe, and that'll stay his firm proposition for as long as his authority holds sway over the party. So apologies for the obvious confusion we might have caused by the time that the Monday repeat goes out. Besides, the PM isn't in favour of a referendum because you can't rely on the electorate to make a sensible decision. Quite so, John. The evidence speaks for itself. Francis, which miss led a campaign after father misled?
Oh, this is Nicholas Scott, the Minister for the Disabled, who's got a daughter called Victoria who works for something called Radar Charity. He admitted misleading the House of Commons over this disability bill. He said he wouldn't resign. She said that he jolly well ought to. And the Major said that Nicholas Scott had his full confidence and would remain in post, which is what he said about David Mellor, Norman Lamont. So I should think Mr. Scott's feeling very secure indeed now.
Neatly done. This is about Tory Minister Nicholas Scott, who admitted misleading the House of Commons, but explained it was done inadvertently. Even Mr. Scott's daughter, Victoria, joined in the row by calling for her own father to resign. Imagine her explaining that one when she got home. Did I go on national television and call for you to resign, Daddy? Oops! I must have done it inadvertently. Despite a ruling by Betty Boothroyd, opposition MPs continued to claim Scott had lied, cheated and dishonoured Parliament. Any more flattery like that and he'll be up for promotion. Mark, your question now. Where did the party kick off the party with the Nelson touch?
Nelson must be a reference to South Africa.
Yes.
Nelson Mandela has become president of South Africa and he was inaugurated this week, defeating the National Party and with a splendid array of distinguished guests, including Prince Philip and Douglas Hurd. And this struck me as an example of how John Major's government just can't get anything right. Prince Philip and Douglas Hurd's car broke down on the way to the inauguration, and they weren't allowed into the main dinner. They had to sit outside on the lawn and eat smoked crocodile with the other, with the other guests. And Hillary Clinton was there. Hillary Clinton met Winnie Mandela, presumably to ask her what was the secret of a happy marriage. the answer to that seems to be sticking him in jail for 27 years. But that was it. Nelson Mandela is out of jail and now president.
That's right, absolutely right. So it was the historic inauguration of Nelson Mandela. His speech called for all South Africans to forget the events of the past, to which the old National Party said, fine, let's forget all about that election we had last week. Former leader F.W. de Klerk is looking forward to his new job with the cabinet. He's not exactly sure what his duties will be, but his new colleagues have started calling him boy.
He's the clerk of the cabinet, isn't he?
Yes, he is the clerk. Well, well done. Alan, will you have a listen to this?
Well, the race is on, and here comes Bride up the back stretch. Heartaches are going to the inside. My tears are holding back. They're trying not to fly. My heart's out of the running. True love scratched for another's sake. The race is on, and it looks like heartaches. And the winner loses all.
Well, your question is, why can we bet on the Lord's Day?
You have to forgive me. I've been a bit distracted ever since Richard's remarks at the first question, when he said he was on a beach in Greece with a tattered Daily Mail which didn't cover anything. Trying to imagine what it didn't cover. Mine is about betting on Sunday.
Right.
I don't mean by that you can bet that Sunday comes at the end of the week, because Joe Coral wouldn't take that kind of a bet.
7-1, is that?
Yes. But you can now go into a betting shop and bet on horses, which are going to run on Sunday, and you can get extremely rich, and then go and presumably redeem yourself at Evensong by going through the runners and riders.
Absolutely. So this is the go-ahead for Sunday racing, a move which has angered church leaders, as it means they'll have to leave the pub early to get the bookies on time. The deregulation of betting shops means that the Prime Minister can have a couple of quid on himself, still being in work on Monday. The scores at the end of the first round are, unsurprisingly, as they always are, this time, for all. A tie. We start round two with a report in the Exmouth Leader.
A fraud case this week was halted at Exeter Crown Court after a juror complained that another juror had fleas.
Well, thank you, Mrs. M. Jervis of Exeter, for sending us that. Richard, it's your turn for a question again. Who's to be offering starters for Tien?
This is a reference to young Paxman.
That's
Jeremy,
right.
Paxman, who, having been humiliated and not being allowed into become a member of the Garry Club, has been forced to take on this humiliating job as chairman of the University Challenge quiz programme when it returns. Mm-hmm. Poor fellow.
It's going to be ghastly for all those students, you know. They're going to turn up and he'll say, here is your question for 10, what is the capital of France? And the bloke will say, well, I believe you're not here to tell us what you believe, you're here to answer this question. We're trying to get...
What does your starter for 10 mean? I never understood it, or I've been hearing it for 30 years or whatever long the show's been going. I never understood what it meant.
Perhaps Barry should say, here's your starter for 2, when he starts the quiz.
Then he could say, no conferring. That would liven it up a bit.
Yes, that's right. Destroy it utterly.
And can't...
Do the first 8-minute, half-hour programme that the BBC have ever broadcast,
can't,
anyway.
Can't we sit on top of the other team like they do on the other
If you remember the question, the answer is Jeremy Paxman, who's been chosen to host the revival of University Challenge. The show dates from 1962, but we're given a 90s feel with such questions as, how many stolen traffic cones are there in your room? No conferring. The programme's makers deny the tone of the show will be lowered by the inclusion of former polytechnics. The first will open with Jeremy introducing a team comprising Wayne, Kev and Gary, Magdalene College, Orpington, reading Metalwork and Fiesta magazine. Francis, who may benefit by taking a swipe at post offices?
Peter Lilly, I should think.
Yes.
Who is trying to cut down on social security fraud, and so in future people collecting their pension or their child benefit will have to produce one of those little plastic credit card things and get it on that. And this is going to cut out fraud, except since they're called swipe cards, it doesn't really bode very well, does it?
Well, it's all about Peter Lilly's plans to computerise benefits claims. He was speaking at the conference of the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters. Well, at least he tried to. He queued up for 3 hours to make his speech. Then found they closed early for half day. And Mark, here's a piece of music for you.
Mud, mud, glorious mud. Nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow. And there let us wallow in glorious mud.
Well, that was the hippopotamus song, Flanders and Swan, of course. The question is, who told it to the Marines with, here's mud in your eye?
The hippopotamus isn't the clue, the mud is.
The mud is the clue.
Oh, right, I thought it was something else Prince Philip had smoked at Nelson Mandela's in order. In that case, it's something to do with the US Marines, is it?
No, it isn't.
The Royal Marines.
The Royal Marines.
Oh, it's not Prince Edward.
Yes, it is.
It's not the story about him being seen kissing his girlfriend and he's now suing the press council because the papers printed a picture of him showing him kissing a woman of the opposite sex, and he feels this could easily damage his reputation. That's the only Prince Edward story of the week.
No, it isn't. There is another one, and Alan will tell
you. He hasn't been kissing a hippo, has he?
When he was in the Royal Marines, he shouted at people, or shrieked at people, and they took exception to this, and he was taken aside one day. He was laying face down in the mud. Awful.
Have you got the...
No, I haven't. I was never in the Marines. I walked this way because of these funny shoes.
It's all about Prince Edward. A report claimed this week that he was so unpopular in the Marines that fellow cadets gave his face a mud pack and rammed it in his mouth, up his nose and in his ears. The news comes in the same week that Prince gained an apology from the Daily Mirror for printing a picture of his girlfriend kissing him in a private place. The private place being palace grounds, of course. Alan, you did so well with that. Here's this. What big budget production brought the Magnificent Nine to number 11?
The Magnificent Nine? This is a film of some kind, is it? The Magnificent Nine, as in German, nine?
The German, as in nine people, nine chancellors.
We can always help out.
Oh, that?
Yes, nine chancellors turning up at number 11.
Yes.
I thought you said that.
I saw only two of them. I saw Kenneth Clark and Norman Lamont cuddling on the step, rather like Prince Edward and Sophie. A picture was taken. I don't know why they were there.
It's to do with the total amount of money they've all lost the country over the last 30 years since Lord Thornycroft, I think, isn't it? It's now reached some round figure in billions. I think that was the... And so they decided...
To celebrate.
Yeah, it could be.
Ideally. It didn't sing anything.
I don't think there was a reason. I think they just happened to turn up at the same time.
Absolutely typical of them, isn't it? No bloody reason for anything, just... gather, because they feel like it. Nothing else to do, they're only chancellors of the Exchequer.
Right. Well, these are the nine chancellors of the Exchequer, collective noun, a deficit, who gathered at number 11 Downing Street for a meal and then spent 5 hours seasonally adjusting the bill before adding a service charge of £15 billion. The group photograph led to speculation that the meeting was, in fact, an open audition for a new series of The Munsters. The scores at the end of round two are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with a cutting from the Times of India, sent in by Andrea Shelton of Derby.
Fitness guru Jake Steinfeld turned Madonna into a lean machine, Harrison Ford into shape to go raiding, and gave Warren Beatty a heavenly body. He says he can do the same for you with a towel, broomstick, and two cans of tomatoes.
Some whiz kid there. Thank you, Andrea, for sending us that. Richard, your question... Why was exercise dynamic impact an exercise in dynamic impact?
Very good question indeed, this one. Got a bloody clue.
Would you like a clue, or will Francis supply it?
Like we'd both like one, please.
Here's a visual clue. Oh!
We think we know what it is now. It's these parachutists.
It's the parachutists.
Oh, the brilliant clue?
No.
Oh, no.
Very good.
No, I think we do know it. It's some parachutists on an exercise, and 50 of them, I think, came a cropper.
That's right.
Which is more than has ever happened before. But I don't know quite why they all came such cropper.
It was because the ground was too hard.
What?
It's extraordinary. I mean, where would we be able to fight? I mean, we can't come down anywhere. The ground's hard because it'll all get hurt. Rivkin will be sitting there with a map wondering whether anywhere soft is going to attack us. Well, if they don't, we're in dead trouble. It's been awful. They'll come home in simmer frames.
Yeah.
These are the 50 paratroopers who were hurt when they landed on hard ground during an exercise in the Mediterranean. On touchdown, the rugged airborne regiment was captured after a fierce skirmish with the elite wing of the St. John's Ambulance Brigade. apparently at one point they were involved in hand-to-hand bandaging. Luckily, many of the squaddies managed to avoid sustaining permanent damage by skillfully landing on their heads. And I shan't be going out in Aldershot at night for some time. Francis, will you listen to this?
I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony.
Perfect harmony.
I'd like to hold it in my arms and keep it company. I'd like to see the world for once all standing hand in hand and hear them echo.
Well, I don't have to tell you what that was. The question is, where does good Coke cost less than the real thing?
Well, not for much longer, it doesn't. Sainsbury's have Absolutely. Had to retreat, silly yes. idiots, because they started this new own brand of Coke, which they put in little red cans, which had writing on the side saying classic Coke in exactly the same writing that you get on a Coca-Cola can, same shade of red, same everything else. And Coca-Cola weren't very pleased about this and said, we're going to sue you. This is passing off, and copying our can. And Sainsbury said, oh, is it? Good Lord, we had no idea it was so similar. You know, we just had the idea all on our own. But now you mention it, I suppose it is a bit. And faced with an enormous lawsuit, they've retreated and they're now going to make it look like 7-Up instead, I think.
Yes. This is the end of the Sainsbury's Coca-Cola war, the most savage encounter since the infamous Stoke Poges Vimto riots. Mark, why might a holiday only be a hole in the wall away?
Why?
Why Absolutely. Might a holiday be a hole in the wall away? The hole in the wall...
Being a prison wall?
No.
Oh, a cash point.
Yes.
You'll be able to take a holiday in a cash point machine?
No, the thing is... as everything is going to come down to cash points. In future, you'll be able to actually talk in a cash point. They're going to have little video phones. You can talk to your bank manager and your travel agent, people like that, while you're standing around waiting to be mugged. All this means, of course, is when your tickets come through, some tattooed oik will hit you over the head and go to the West Indies instead of you. I know why people can't go into shops anymore, but they just want to stand in front of these holes in the wall and get crippled. Right? It's a funny old world, really.
That was an oikist remark you made there.
Oikist. Two of us who won't be walking home through all the shots.
It is the news that bank cash machines may soon be dispensing holidays. Thanks to new technology, a customer could punch in a holiday in Rio only to be told your current limit is Clacton. However, security experts believe the system is flawed as it will allow the careful bank robber the opportunity to pull a job and book a getaway all in the same building. The scores at the end of round three are still tight. It's a nail-biting 12-all. Before we start the final round, here's a snippet from The Independent.
A motorcyclist who built a Harley-Davidson in his home had knocked down a wall to get it out. Andrew Peters of Parkstone, Dorset, said building it inside seemed the obvious thing to do. It's warmer and nearer the kettle.
What a world we live in. Thank you, Sue Elliott, for sending us that. Richard, here's a piece of music for you. Did you know what that music was, Richard?
No. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, it was Captain Pugwash, the theme of Captain Pugwash, which is a children's programme.
I love Captain Pugwash.
Oh, good. Well, you'll like the question, then. Who spent 24 weeks going the wrong way back to the start?
It's a man sailing around the
world. Could you help him out with some detail, Francis?
Yes. That's the basic story. It's rather boring.
Yes, he's broken the record for going around the world the wrong way, single-handed. Yes. Except he then got becalmed just off the south coast of England as he was about to break the record. But the best thing about it was he said he'd taken with him an inflatable doll of a woman, which he'd dressed up in all sorts of rather strange leather gear to frighten off pirates.
I think that was how Captain Pugwash came into it.
Absolutely.
But this is all about the single-handed yachtsman Mike Golding, who sailed around the world sponsored by Group 4 Security. His 167 days going the wrong way delighted Group 4, who actually thought he'd broken the world record for delivering a remand prisoner to Maidstone. Group 4 entered into the spirit of the challenge by losing radio contact for 3 weeks. I think they've suffered enough. Well answered, Francis. And that's the story. And now is your proper question. What's an ad of two halves united?
An ad of two halves
ad united. As in advertisement.
Yes.
Two halves.
United as in Manchester. FA Cup final? No. We better not speak about the FA Cup final because by the time of the Monday repeat, we'll know that Chelsea have won. So you better give me a clue.
Well, John Major will be pleased.
Ad of two halves. Well, it's obviously to do with football and advertising,
yes.
But...
Yes, that's right.
Bobby Charlton and George Best.
And Dennis Law.
All playing in Reebok, wherever that is. It's probably another team that's going to beat us before we qualify next time out.
But it's computer trickery to make it look as if they're all playing in the same team.
Yes.
As Alan has pointed out.
This is a television advert for sports shoes that shows a Manchester game featuring a team of players spanning 60 years. It's a computer imaging fantasy match in which Dennis Law passes to Nobby Styles, who heads the ball to Cantona, who punches the referee. And gets sent off. The technology is so clever, Bobby Charlton appears with a believable hairstyle. George Best manages a full 3 minutes without falling over. Mark.
My dentist told me quite a good joke about football.
Oh, really?
The day before yesterday, yes.
Would you like to share it with us?
I think it's quite a good joke. It's about a bloke is walking down a main road in Liverpool and suddenly spots someone, rushes across the road and says, "Excuse me, I'm awfully sorry, but aren't you Ian Rush?" And the chap says, "Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I am. The Ian Rush that plays for Liverpool FC." "Yes, yes, I am. God, you wait like to... Tell me, do you know John Barnes?" He says, "Well, as a matter of fact, I do know John Barnes. Well, why don't you ever pass him the bloody ball?" Sorry, I meant nothing. It's nothing to do with Reebok.
I suppose really. It's too late to tell him we had that on 2 weeks ago. Is it?
Did we hear it here?
Yeah. How do you remember?
Mark Perkins did it.
That's
my dentist never listens to this program. That is amazing. It came from Dr. Alzheimer's joke book, I'm sure.
Alzheimer's joke book, yeah.
Can we have Alan's dentist on next week?
Mark, here's your question now. Who made a meal of being a stick in the mud?
A stick in the mud?
It's not the Dickinsons.
It's a couple.
It's the Dickinsons.
Dickinsons.
Which Dickinson?
They emptied a pond.
They emptied a pond. The Dickinsons emptied a pond.
That's quite right.
Who's the Dickinsons? Your dentist and his wife.
Dickinsons lived by a pond.
Right.
I'll tell this to Mark because he needs to know.
Okay, right.
The Dickinsons lived by a pond.
Right.
And someone wanted to build a restaurant on the other side of the pond.
Right.
And the Dickinsons thought the only reason they want to do it because it has a nice view of the pond.
Right.
So they pulled the plug and drained the pond. And they're now being sued by the village where all this happened because they've removed the one interesting thing about the village, which was the pond. There would have been two interesting things, which would have been a restaurant as well, but they're not coming because you don't want to sit there having your start of at 10 and looking out at the mud. I think they were called Dickinsons.
Is this Ned and May Dickinson? Let's leave it at that. Alan, who was driven to take a bit of licence with English history?
This is not John Patton again and the curriculum rubbish.
This is a motorist.
It's the man who's not allowed to. Well, it's a man who has been disqualified from driving and he has never taken a driving test in his life, but his defence is that the right to drive a motor car is enshrined in the Magna Carta. Apparently. when, of course, traffic speed in London was a lot higher than it is today. He also says it's in the Bill of Rights that this is right to drive a motor car in the Magna Carta, which is... The Magna Carta, I think, is a four-wheel drive Italian model, isn't it, Barry?
Yes. Very good. This is motorist Spencer Schuster, who told a Bournemouth court he didn't need a driving licence because the Magna Carta of 1215 gave him the right to drive without, and he's never had one since starting to drive in the 30s. He also quoted the Bill of Rights of 1689, but Bournemouth magistrates are struggling to catch up with this newfangled legislation. The court tried to examine the Magna Carta, but found King John had sent it off to Swansea for renewal in 1216, and it hasn't come back yet. Well, we appear to have come more or less to the end of the contest, but before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams brought along. Richard, have you brought a cutting for us?
Yes, it's another one about an explorer who went to the North Pole. It says, the Norwegian explorer, Bjørg Usland, yesterday became the first person to reach the North Pole alone and without help. After a 52-day trek dragging a sledge across the hostile ice, his spokesman said, Mr. Usland, who built up fat reserves by drinking a glass of olive oil every day for a year before setting off, will be lifted off the ice by two planes.
Francis.
This is from The Independent last week. Sir, I had no problem saving money as a child. When I was 7 years of age, my father presented me with my own money box. It was a solid metal box, securely fixed to the wall in the understairs cupboard, and I proudly put my shilling into it every week. I was 10 before I discovered it was the gas meter.
Mark, what have you brought for us?
Well, this is from the Dorset Evening Echo. Jobless Ford Capri driver Daniel Hathaway has been fined £400 by Bridport magistrates after an accident on a country lane. Hathaway, 19, said that he could not produce his driving licence because it had been put in a washing machine. The clerk said it was clean.
Have you got a cutting? I'll do that.
Have you got a cutting? What do you think I'm holding? This is from the Yorkshire Evening Post. Hooper, the judge said, had the rather remarkable record of 12 O levels, 4 A levels, an honours degree in chemistry, and 38 previous convictions.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores now. Well, they're quite interesting. It was Richard and Francis who scored a splendid 15, but Alan and Mark slipped ahead in the last round with a 17. This week's winners. Well played. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Northwich Guardian, sent in by Trevor Booth of Cheshire.
Thieves stole 5 alloy wheels from a Rover parked in Westage Lane, Great Budworth, on Wednesday night. The crooks subsequently attempted to steal the vehicle,